Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Well, Rusty boy, launching into the show with no idea what we're going to do today. Okay, we got a bunch of stuff we're going to talk
about. That's every week.
That's every week. Throw a big goo of Suspendables against the wall and see what sticks. You know, we're getting old, Rusty. If it's not you, then it's me, or it's Steve, the producer in Ottawa, that when we start these shows, it's not uncommon that someone says, hang on, I got to take a leak.
So true.
Lots going on, Rusty. Of course, there's lots going on. The playoffs are around the corner. There's teams.
Look fighting. At the smile on your face.
I know. Guess who's in?
Oh, my God.
X marks the spot, Rusty, as I was social media doing. The Oilers got in. And you've always been a little outspoken about the Oilers, saying they need a little more production than the big guys. They seem to. You know what it reminds me of, Russ? I heard, and it might have been you who said that one time, but probably not. But. Maybe because it was a little derogatory towards the guy. Luke Robitaille was, you know, a great LA King.
Oh yeah. Right?
Great LA King. And I love Luke. I know him a little bit.
Yeah.
We've run great into guy. Each other over the years. And then someone said one time, I think he was there going, you're the worst 50 goal scorer I've ever seen.
No way.
And they had his stats. Like he got, you know, they were giving him a hard time. You got a bunch of empty netters. You got a bunch of, you know, in 7-3 games and shit like that. But it's kind of the year of the 50 goalers. Rusty, they're back. Dreisaitl, Ovi is just, how good is this guy, Russ?
Oh, my God. He's so good.
He's got gray hair. Like I was saying today on Stevie's podcast, his fastball is not slowing down, Rusty. You know, he can rip the one-timer still. He plays hard, and he's old.
Yeah, he's a beast. He is a beast, and he's closing in on Gretz.
Yep, yeah, he is. It's getting a little closer. Like a year ago, everyone went, yeah, okay, but he's got two years to go, you know, to try and do it on average. And now it's like, hey, yeah, he's getting a little, he's getting a little closer. Anyway, my Oilers made it. Rusty, they got. Two things, Rusty, that may be going on for them to give them the confidence. One is this new coach has got the good record since Tippett got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Mike Smith sort of caught fire, which if you want good news going into the playoffs, the number one, Rusty, is the goalie's really good right now. Touch wood. Mm-hmm. Is that the deal?
Well, Evander Kane was a great signing. You know, he's got, what, 21 goals in 40 games or something?
Yeah.
And they needed another scorer. You can't just have two guys. I mean, I've talked about it before. You just can't have it all on one or two guys' shoulders. You got to get scoring from other players. And Evander's been a really nice fit there on that team and taken some pressure off the two studs.
Right.
We should ask Evander what the odds are of them winning.
Oh, good one. Yeah, good one. Yeah.
Everybody deserves a second chance, right?
Everyone deserves a second chance. But the unknown was going to be, okay, we're going to sign this guy. Okay. And everyone's going, I hope he can get by all these accusations and allegations and all these personal problems. And obviously the guy has, obviously he can sort of compartmentalize. Was there ever a time, Rusty, when you played that personal things affected your game? For sure.
I had a hard time when I was in Montreal. I went through a breakup and just devastated me. And you know,
you got flicked I did.
No, and it was, I broke up and then, you know, it came back to haunt me and blah, and just young. I was 20, 25 at the time, maybe.
Right.
And it just, it affected me, and it was then it was affecting my game. So I got into therapy and ended up having my best year ever after. I only needed about five sessions with this awesome therapist from McGill. He was a big old guy. He played football, I believe, at McGill, and we just hit it off. And there was a lot of other things. I hadn't dealt with my dad's death and all kinds of stuff when I was a kid. And it, so we started focusing more on that. And he said, look, you're playing for the Montreal Canadiens. You're single. You know what? You're going to be fine. And, and you'll get this, you'll get past this. And I did. And then, like I said, I went on to have my best year. So for a period there, I mean, Pat Burns asked Chris Chelios, goes, what's wrong with the number six?
With Rusty.
Yeah. And I couldn't explain it to anybody. I was heartbroken. So anyways, I got over it and went on to play good. So yes, to your answer, it is a big yes.
Yeah.
So we're all human, right? Like every player, they're human beings, you know, whether you McDavid or Gretzky or, you know, Rick Tocchet or
right,
Cam Neely, whoever, Brett Hull, like people, we're all human beings and not robots. And we have feelings and we go through the same things that other people go through in everyday regular life. And some fans don't realize that because we put people on these pedestals and think they're superhuman, and some make really bad mistakes. And, you know, Evander, I don't know him. I've never met him. I've only read, I only know what everybody has heard or read. And you know what? Hopefully he's cleaned up his life and, you know, he has a gambling problem. Hopefully he can get through that. Like any addiction, as you well know, yours dealing with it daily. I mean, he's going to have to deal with that the rest of his life. Because obviously it's a huge problem for him. Hopefully was.
Right. So yeah. Interesting. You said, you know, five sessions was pretty good. Get some therapy and, I did the same thing, Russ, and was it five sessions? No, I just finished my 1,894th session. Okay, I'm just under, I got the, you know, someone got 3,000 hits this week. I'm just coming up, Rusty. Okay, I'm going to be in the 2,000 club. Okay, coming up. Good. Okay, it's gonna
good I'm for you. I there, hope Rusty. I hope you're not kidding. I hope you are going to therapy that
yeah,
much.
Yeah, I am. Yes, fantastic. I am. Yeah,
good.
Yeah, good. I am, and
Good. That's good to hear.
Well, I'll tell you what is. I'll tell you what's good about it.
Everything's good about it.
It took practice because I made shit up when I first started going. I did. I would just make up these stories where I thought this will really impress the guy. Okay, that I and I did. I lied about sort of my personal stuff, and then I finally came to you know and said, well, that's no good. You know, and. So it took some practice and then things began to crack open, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what the really good thing is about it, because I see it a lot, right? I see it with the fellowship I'm in, and there's a lot of crossover with mental health and addictions and all that. Is I was telling a guy the other day, he's like, why should I go? And I said, well, if you don't understand, you know, why you're crying when you cry and maybe when you're inappropriate or why you feel down. Mm-hmm. Or why you feel way up when you shouldn't, or, yeah. You know, all those misplaced feelings. If you can get in the groove with the therapist and get to that, you don't need to know the answer. They can tell you why you feel the way you do. And for me, that was a big deal because I was very confused,
yeah.
Very confused from dark days and all this stuff going, oh, why am I obsessive? Why do I have trouble with women? Why do I, you know?
Are you? You've got no problem with
no, women. I know that. I thank you, Russ.
Because you don't have one.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what they're good at. They're really good at explaining to you why, you know, why you feel the way, and then you can go from there. But anyway, yeah, I'm just coming.
I've been in a few times over my life, and it's been. I always bring something. I've always brought something on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've gone therapy. And I talk about this openly because I want people to know that if they have problems or whatever, that they should go and seek help. And through our foundation, through all the money we've raised for mental health, I've told these stories a million times. Mm-hmm. And what it's funny when you talk about it, it allows people to share their stories. I've had so many people come to me in Victoria, especially when I told in the newspaper my history and story with my dad and him mm-hmm. dying and how close he was to me and how it affected me and all this stuff. And people would stop me in the street and just start telling me about all their problems, like all the things they had inside, they hadn't told anybody. And there I was, the recipient of these stories. My daughter on her Instagram told this story of her mental health and her journey. And and she had to turn her social media off for a month because she couldn't handle like all the stories. She wasn't capable of hearing everyone's story.
Right.
And it was affecting her to the point where she goes, I'm not made for this. I'm not built. They need to be telling a therapist, not me.
Right.
And so, right. But it's good that you're talking and telling this to, you know, your story and hopefully my story. I mean, like I said, I've been in a few times and every time I come out, I feel way better. And I haven't been in a long time, probably, I think 15, 16 years ago was the last time I was in therapy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the it's getting easier for people to do it, right? With the exposure of it, you know, mm-hmm. causes like yours and Bell Media Day, Let's Talk and all that stuff. So it's good. Speaking of a bunch of stuff, Rusty, Guy Lafleur.
Oh my God.
Mike Bossy.
Yeah. Horrible.
Too soon. Know, Guy Lafleur died, mm-hmm. between the last show we did and today, at young 70 years old.
Yeah.
The outpouring was, you knew it was going to be, you know, over the top, man, yeah. that it was going to be to the moon, what this guy meant. I watched a bunch of it. You couldn't help but see it. And yet I wasn't annoyed by it by any means. Right.
No.
It was like, okay, this guy's, you hear about Guy Lafleur all the time. You and I are the age where we grew up as a child watching him.
Yeah.
Watching games with our dad. But this guy, Russ, bigger than life as a player.
A flower.
Talk about him, Russ.
Well, I was a Toronto Maple Leaf fan growing up, and I remember my first game in Montreal, and I had Guy Lafleur pinned up against the boards. And I wanted to just hang on to him and ask him a question. Like, it was like just magical. You know, you go and play against
you were on people. The ice with Guy Lafleur.
Yeah, I played against Guy. I played against him in Montreal. And then I was a Hab when he came back and played for the New York Rangers. And I think it was his first game back was against us, Montreal. And in warm-up, every time he scored, the place went crazy. Standing ovation in warm-up. And that frickin' night, he got 3 goals against us. He scored a hat trick.
No way.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Wow. And that was about 4 or 5 years after he had retired.
Yeah.
That he came out of retirement and then he went on to play in Quebec. And but Guy, what a lot like Gretz, very quiet. Like when you talk to him, he seemed a little shy.
Right.
I met him. He was doing something in Victoria and we had a really good conversation, played an outdoor game with him in Edmonton. Anyways, he's just a wonderful, wonderful man. And, you know, he went through there was always stories of Guy trying to do this, trying to do that off the ice, you know, businesses and stuff like that. But he was such a god in Montreal. And I think anybody who was a hockey fan, whether you were not a Habs fan, we all appreciated it, Guy Lafleur for sure.
Yeah. Liam McGuire, who everyone knows across the country, we had him on the trivia guru.
The MacGyver.
The MacGyver, the everything of hockey. But I mean this quite sincerely when I talk about Liam's team is the Montreal Canadiens. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you think
he asked his wife, right? He told that story on.
Yeah, we'll get the story.
But he told the story when he was on our that show that he married his
center ice.
He asked her or got married. Anyways,
he got
something at center ice.
For sure he asked her.
Yeah.
For sure he asked her. But he may have got, could he have got married at the Forum? I'll have to wait and see. But anyway, his team is Montreal. You know how much he knows about hockey. Well, imagine how much he knows about the Montreal Canadiens. So we're going to bring him on in a few minutes, to talk about that and more of the personal side of Guy. Russ, is there anything, it seems all these guys, Ovi, right, where, you know, might bust this record, Wayne, Bobby Orr, other guys who have just set phenomenal records in sports. Almost always, Russ, you never hear the guy was a bit of a dink, but he got 3,000 points. Or the guy was, you know, not very friendly, not this. But it always seems these guys, the ones we do know and the ones we don't, that they're going, and by the way, just as good a guy off the ice.
No, you're right.
Is there anything to that, Russ?
I think you're right. I've heard a couple things of guys in other sports that weren't so positive.
Like Barry Bonds, remember in baseball, right?
And I've heard a couple things, but by and large, when you meet a superstar, they are so humble and there's something about them. You know, you just, oh man, it's like they just walk in a room and everybody's, oh my God. And
right.
They like Gress never does anything wrong. So freaking polite. Calls your parents when you know they need a call and does the right thing here, does the right thing there, and doesn't look for it, you know, look for, oh, this is what I'm gonna do. Mm-hmm. And they mm-hmm. just do things that are incredible. And it's like tough guys, like the toughest guys I ever played against are the most humble, quiet guys off the ice. You could go into a bar and you see a tough guy over the court. They're not in there like mouthing off or acting tough.
Right.
They feel they inside them, they know who they are and they're very confident. And sometimes people take that as cockiness, but it's not. It's just they're so freaking confident and they know how good they are and they know who they are. And I don't know. I haven't met too many assholes that were superstars.
On your tough guy thing, go back and listen to our show with Chris Nyland. If you want to, you know, get a perspective from the tough guy himself. It was a great show.
Wendell Clark too.
Yeah. Wendell, Marty, right. Marty's hilarious,
Chaser,
right?
Chaser.
Chaser's on. We've had some tough guys. Yeah. Which Rusty, if you were a couple of things off the page, I was watching, are you a baseball fan, Russ? Cause baseball's up and going.
No, right? I played, but it's just a little slow for me. We had Dodger tickets for years and we gassed them.
It may be the first time in many, many years that everybody is saying the Jays are the nuts.
With all
the off season stuff they did. They got Springer there from Houston. Anyway, I'm a huge Jays fan. I watch it all the time. And I was watching a Yankee game and the Jays get to play the Yankees a lot. The Yankees win a game, I think in the final inning or something in the ninth, or maybe it was extra innings. I don't know. And it was in New York. And you've played in New York, Russ. You've been to New York. Next thing, Russ, they win and the fans are drilling beer cans onto the field.
Okay. Yeah.
Like hammering the field. And to the point where the Yankees all ran out. And like Aaron Judge and these guys are like, and Stanton are like, hey, calm down, right? But they're crazy fans. I said, I gotta ask Rusty, you ever get pegged by a fan? Have you ever had a hard time with a fan?
Oh, fuck. When we had the brawl, when I played for Montreal and we had the brawl in Moscow against the Red Army, they were throwing vodka bottles at us. And these fucking huge coins.
What?
They were coming. Yeah, the army had to take us off the ice with machine guns. It was fucking what crazy. Oh my God, we had a brawl. And I told the story where Brian Skrulin sucker punched the coach, ticking off because he leaned over and was yelling at Pat Burns.
Yep.
And fucking Screwy just hauled off and suckered him. You can Google the brawl.
He punched who?
Tikhanov, the coach. Tikhanov?
Yeah.
And then Mike Keane,
yeah, beautiful. Yeah,
but Mike Keane, Shane Corson, Gerald Diddick beat the shit out of these guys at center ice, and I mean it was brutal. Pavel Bure played in that game. He was only a kid back mm-hmm. then, and we lost in overtime. And it's the only game in my entire career that I wanted to fucking lose because I was worried about getting out of there. And in the stands were all the wives. I was single at the time. My mom came and she's wearing full blown head to toe Montreal Canadian shit. And I was like, oh my God, I'm worried about all I could think about was my mom.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it took 30 to 40 minutes to get us back on the ice. And we finished the third period and then we lost in overtime. And I was thankful. I might even pass it to the guy who scored.
Yeah, nice. There's my headline. I write these things down as the show goes.
Yeah.
Russ wanted to lose a game.
But in the early 80s, if you went to a game in Boston, Buffalo, Chicago, New York, in Toronto, Montreal, and Canada, we had these beautiful usherettes that took care of your seats and
sure
everywhere you went. And there was these ladies who were called usherettes that took your ticket, showed you your seat. All those teams I mentioned had freaking bodyguards for ushers because the fights in the stands were freaking better than on the ice.
It was
nuts. The guys in Chicago and Boston, I mean, these guys look like bikers. And they were like, selling beer, getting tickets. There was no females working in those arenas, not in the stands anyways. But
unsafe. Yeah, right.
Oh, my God. So I saw some crazy stuff back then in the stands more than on the ice, fans throwing stuff on the ice.
Your YouTube homework will be.
I did play for the Leafs when they threw the jerseys back on the ice.
When was that? What?
In the 80s. We were so bad. They were throwing freaking jerseys back.
Regular season games. They were tossing.
Yeah, jerseys. They were. Yeah. Yeah. And wearing bags. Remember the Leafs fans that wore the bags?
Yeah. Yeah. The, what they call it? Yeah. The unknown comic was the guy who wore the bags.
Oh my God. So I saw all that in Toronto.
Did you ever have to address the fans? Like when in not you, but or anyone, like do the press conference going, okay, how are we going to stop this?
No.
Or just, sort of interviews after going.
Nah, not really. I mean, you go out and you play hard and you want to win for the fans, right? So if you play well, the fans are on your side. I remember we were so good in Montreal at times. We would go on the road and we would sweep a road trip and come back. And as we got on the ice for warmups, we'd get a standing ovation. I mean, that's how much they love their team. So the if you want to win over fans, you got to play well, play hard. I love what I'm freaking in love with Sutter coaching Calgary.
I love
his interviews. And he talked about the fans. Oh my God. It's awesome. I wish I knew him. Like I feel like I know him now. Because I'm becoming a bigger fan daily. And yesterday or day before he said, I'm out in the streets every day. Cause I think he's a walker. You know, he probably walks. Mm-hmm. And because I saw him in LA once walking around the building before a game, he was walking. So anyways, he's out walking around and he says, I talk to the fans every day and all they want is honesty and hard work. That's all they want. Yeah. And that's pretty much true with every fan across both countries. They want honest, hardworking teams. And, they're paying a lot of money to see these guys play. But his one-liners are unbelievable.
Oh, he's the best.
Then he talked about, I met with the players last year and they were sick and tired of the selfishness on this team. Like,
he's
like calling out the team. Like we had too many selfish guys.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering like which of those selfish guys are still on the team.
Well, he's one of those guys. We've quoted him before, which must come away. Go, what's he mean by that?
What? We got to get him on the show.
We got to try and get him on the show. He's deadpan. He's totally unpredictable.
Yeah.
But what isn't unpredictable is you're going to get a quote from this guy.
I think he represents most of Albertans, not all.
But he's a Red Deer guy, right?
But he's a heart. They're ranchers and. you know, there's a lot of tough people in Alberta. That's not the easiest place. You got to grind it out. And, you know, my buddy said, McCowan said, you lose your job there, you get one by Friday, you know, you get another job. They're tough, hardworking people. Most Albertans, I would say.
You're talking about fans doing stuff. So, a real story and distracting players and shit. So, years ago, I ended up at Gretz's house, one evening. Humble brag. And, there's always a million FedEx boxes there, right? People are sending him stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's the king, you know, which he is. Anyway, he opens up this box. We're hanging out. We're eating dinner. We're hanging out. And he goes, look at these here, right? And they're from the Calgary Stampede. And they sent him a pair of cowboy boots with spurs, right? So anyway, he puts these things on and he's walking around the house in these cowboy boots, right? And we're laughing our head off. And he's spinning the spurs, right? And he's going, Jimmy, ka-ching, 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 you know, and he's walking through the hallway on the marble floor and he kept him on for about an hour, you know, and
that's then hilarious.
Anyway, it was hilarious. And I went home, my seats are right on the ice, four rows up, right inside the blue line. And so I'm at the game the next night. I hadn't seen him or talked to him since I saw him doing the cowboy boot routine. And he's getting ready. They go to commercial, right? And he's getting, you know, Russ, you play. You're in this face-off circle waiting for the red light to go off so they can drop the puck. And before the ref is about to drop the puck, I go, hey. And he knew where my seats were. I go, hey, hop along, kid there. How's it going, right? Anyways, he starts to laugh. Jeez. And the ref drops the puck right when he's laughing. And they win. The other guy wins the faceoff and he wheels around. And he goes, knock it off. during a game.
That's funny. Know. How are those seats? You still got them?
No. That was like you. Someone else was paying for them.
Oh, okay.
It was Molson. When I was Molson in the 80s. So, Rusty, all these teams, the big ones, Toronto, Montreal. We're going to bring Leo on here in a second. Toronto, Montreal, New York, Kings, Mini, Dallas. If you were to be honored, Russ, by one team, I'm guessing the tough one would be Toronto, Montreal. But here I am asking you. Maybe I'm wrong. Who would you want to be honored by?
Oh, definitely Toronto. It's my first team. First, you know, I got picked the first round. It was my favorite team growing up, and you know, it was unfortunate that it didn't work out there. So it'd definitely be Toronto.
Well, that ruins my whole bit for the segue to the Montreal Canadian guy.
Yeah, well, I respect Montreal. It was great. It is a great franchise, and most of my crew was good there. The ending was not great, but anyways, I feel blessed that I got an opportunity to play there.
Right on, man. The Masterton Trophy, Russ. Mm-hmm. Is best exemplifies perseverance, sportsmanship, dedication. And I was saying earlier today, I'm going to, so if you win that, each team gets to nominate a guy. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you win it and I'm on your team and I'm going, well, I showed perseverance. I was the best sport ever. It's like, I don't know, in a weird way, I'm going, there must be 29 other guys who go, well, fuck, what about me? I did all that. Did you ever win it?
No, never did.
What? Is it a big award, Russ?
Well, I think so, because some guys have gone through a lot, injuries, illness, that have come back and played. I mean, Bobby Ryan, I think he won it in Ottawa.
They're talking about Carey Price being the shoe-in for this.
Oh, really?
Because of his comeback.
Yeah.
I'm going to nominate you.
Oh, yeah.
Post-career Masterton Trophy guy. okay, let's stand down.
Oh, no, my question.
Oh, yeah, sorry, you got a question. Hang on, caller, line two, you're on the air. Caller, what's your question?
How was the wedding?
Oh, fuck. You know, I had the stuff written down, and then I scratched it out. I'll tell you, because my here's the deal.
They just think if they needed a video photographer there.
Okay. If you're new to the show,
you would have done it for free.
If you're new to the show, I took a picture of Michael Jordan at his golf course last month, or I don't know, 2 months of February, I think. And I wasn't supposed to, and I put it online, and I haven't heard from the great one. So if I wouldn't have taken a bad picture, I would have been at a wedding this weekend.
I thought it was a video.
Yeah, it was a video that I did. But anyway, I was watching Paulina on Instagram. Like her or not, man, she takes you inside her life. There's no doubt about it. And I was just every post that she put up, I started putting the amount of money to it that I thought it would cost. Okay.
Oh boy, yeah.
It's got to be 1.2 mil this Jeez. Wedding. It's Kid Rock was there
performing. Yeah, Kid Rock. Yeah. But they're friends, so Trump was there. Donald Trump was at the wedding.
Yep. Congratulations to DJ and Paulina and to, of course, Wayne and Janet and DJ's parents. Big wedding. That was a quick engagement.
8 years.
Two kids in 8 years. They ran right to the altar, Rusty.
10 years, actually, they've been together.
10 years. And, of course, you've got one coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, July 2nd. But I just got invited to go to LACC, which is a big deal golf club in LA.
Yeah, I've played there.
Oh, you have?
I have.
And so I'm just going over the rules, like
LA Country Club.
Yeah, LACC. Says, to my friend Cliff Pearson invited me. He's from Montreal, lives down here in LA, member of Sherwood and LACC. And he goes, please put phone on vibrate and keep in bag. No calls anywhere. Can use email and text on the course. And so you are not coming.
Okay. Stick around here. We're bringing on Liam, who I've known for many years, many, many years. Our show's about an hour, sometimes about an hour 15. And I said, I got to get Liam on to talk about Guy Lafleur and the Montreal Canadiens. And I thought, yeah, fuck, I'll never get him off though, if we bring him on. And so Rusty, Stevie and I were talking this morning, with the passing of Guy Lafleur and Toronto, back in our day, you were either a fan of Toronto or Montreal. And I'm looking at the days of the 70s when I was watching a bunch of those games with my dad, Russ, and go past Guy Lafleur for a second and then go to a Larry Robinson and a LaPerriere and a Jacques Lemaire and on and on and on. That team, Rusty, had an unbelievable amount of superstars.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of Toronto, go to Toronto and I'm going, I don't know, Bobby Bond, Dave Keon or something like that. So you were around that, Russ. How many guys were there that you just, when you were playing hockey, going, this is a distraction here, man, when you look up in the rafters?
How about when I got traded there and I walk into the room and Bob Gainey, Larry Robinson, Matt Snazlin, Bobby Smith, Ryan Walter.
Carbo.
Carbo, Brian Scrudlin, Mike McPhee. And then the young guns were Patrick Waugh, Shane Corson, Stéphane Richer, Claude Lemieux. It was unbelievable to walk into that room at that time. Could you imagine what it was like when you had Hall of Famers who were second line centermen playing for the Montreal Canadiens behind Lafleur, Chat, Lemaire? You got Savard on the point. You had Lapointe, Jesus. Savard, Lapointe,
Mahovlich.
Well, I don't know.
Larry Robinson, Savard, and Lapointe were the big three.
Yeah. And then Dryden. And anyways, we'll let Liam dig in here.
It's hard to make a mistake here, eh, Russ?
Yeah, Liam? Exactly. Yeah, no,
Carbo. Yeah. Larry. Yeah. 1942. Yeah. So that voice you're hearing, I said at the top of the show, we're going to bring him on. Everyone knows Liam. He's nationally recognized, if not around the world, as the eminent hockey trivia guy. But what maybe a lot of people may not know Liam is they think he knows everything about the teams, but your team is Montreal. And Liam McGuire joins us now to talk about all things Guy Lafleur and the Montreal Canadiens. And I was bragging about you to Rusty and tell me about your week, Liam. First of all, when Guy died, how many interviews have you done? How many blogs, how many podcasts, how many newspaper
articles? Well, I posted a blog last night and a sort of a wrap up, I think, for me at this stage. Now we know the services are Sunday and Monday for the wake and the state funeral is Tuesday. So there is some finality to this coming, but He passed away Friday morning. We were informed anyway in the 7 o'clock hour Eastern time. Yep. And by 8:30, I was doing my first interview, and I did them pretty much consistently for the next 16 hours. Jeez. And then started again on Saturday morning. I certainly wasn't alone. There right. was many, many, many others that would have been asked to do shows and come on and guest and things of that nature as well. So it was therapeutic for me, I can tell you, because it was, as much as we knew it was coming, it still stung like hell. And it's a massive, massive loss for a lot of different people and different groups and what have you. But yeah, it was busy, Jimmy, for sure.
Yep. So Liam, give us, let's start off, first of all, in a nutshell, you know, everyone knows the name Guy Lafleur. Even young kids would know him. Give us the quick sort of stats on this guy, Liam, about what made him, so, you know, everyone, like I say, people might not know, saw him play, but they would know about him. Run that down for Liam and his accomplishments as a hockey player on the ice.
Well, I would say the first noteworthy one would be his final year junior that led to his draft. He scored 130 goals his final year junior. So most sources say that's pretty good. He helped lead the Quebec Ramparts to the Memorial Cup. So he was an exceptional junior. He came in and had three, what would later be probably looked at as average seasons. Not a huge, terrible first one, 29 goals, 64 points, but depreciated after that. Things seismically changed for him in 1974. He got married to his girlfriend. Him and Steve Shutt were going back and forth on deciding to take the helmet off. Guy took his helmet off. Shutty tried his off for a while too. But Guy left it off, as we all know. And he signed a new contract. He was being wooed pretty heavily by the Quebec Nordiques. But he signed a five-year deal in Montreal. And those three things culminated to him coming out and feeling a little bit more relaxed and comfortable in his own skin, I guess. And he took off. And I think at that point, took the torch from Bobby Orr and became the best player in the NHL. He reeled off six straight 100-point seasons at the tail end of what Bobby Orr had also accomplished. But Guy also scored 50 goals for six straight years, which at that time was the first guy to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. And along the way, he won three Art Ross trophies, two Hart trophies, three Lester Pearsons, which are now called the Ted Lindsays. Those are the ones voted by the player, a Conn Smythe, and was part of five Stanley Cup winning teams, all of that between 72 and 79. So that in that 7 year run, including those 6 years where he just took off, that's the bulk of what he did that was exceptional. And mm-hmm. and as most players, that would be considered obviously unbelievably exceptional. And he was. And you get into the style and everything else that he brought to the table, and then, you know, post-career and everything. But Jimmy, to answer your question, that's kind of the nutshell of where he ended up with 560 goals, 1,353 points, played one season for the Rangers, and then parts of two with the Quebec Nordiques, and finished with them after he'd been retired for almost 4 years. He's one of only three guys to play after he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, the other two being Gordie Howe and Mario Lemieux. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I think he's the most electrifying player that I ever saw that I ever saw personally myself.
Wow. Let's clear something up before I ask the next question about him. And Russ brought it up and I forgot. Did you get engaged at Center Ice in the Forum, or did you get married?
Huh? I got engaged.
Okay, there we go. Right.
I got engaged. I'm the only man ever to do it in the 71-year, 3 months, 17-day history that building had for hockey. Friday night, September 10, 1993 at 7:35 p.m. Every single light was on and the building was totally empty.
There you go. If I had a chance to do that with all the chicks I've been with, I would be able to do seven different engagements, Russ. I'd be able to, you know, get to Center Ice. Cool story, Liam. The other one I heard you talk about the other day, Liam, whether it was on Stevie's show or somewhere else, about the incredible amount of ice time that Guy Lafleur had. Like
yeah.
I don't know if it was certain games, but it was just a staggering amount of average
minutes.
Well,
it was in that one game, Jimmy, you're bang on there. That was in, by his own admission, he called it the greatest game he ever played. Thursday night, May 10, 79, game 7 against the Bruins. Everybody knew whoever won that series was winning the Stanley Cup. The Rangers were waiting. They weren't as strong as either of those two teams at that time. And I've heard Scotty say it in interviews. He triple shifted Guy, and he believes he played him north of 15 minutes in the third period alone. That's what caused the too many men on the ice penalty. It was actually, I was at that game. I was there with my late father. I was at the Montreal Forum 344 times. 78 of those were playoff games in 21 years. From my first game, May 1, 75, to the final night of that building, Monday night, March 11, 96. And that night, Guy Lafleur, he set up Napier and Guy Lapointe to tie the game at 3. The Habs are down 3-1 going in the third. Middleton stuffed one from behind the net on Dryden. And then too many men on the ice. And it was late in the power play. Late in the power play when Guy scored. I believe it was a buck 14 left in the period. Mm-hmm. So the power play was nearly over when he fired that shot that Gilles Gilbert still hasn't seen to this day. But Scotty says he played.
I told you he's a fan, Rusty. By the way, if you're listening to Liam for the first time, he's not reading any of that. Yeah. Okay. If you don't know what Liam's all about, that stuff is coming out of the top of his head, out his ears, out his mouth and nose and eyes like lava, man. So, you got anything, Rusty? You're good.
Oh, I was going to ask, I think, towards the end of his career in Montreal, he wasn't happy with his ice time. I think they had started playing him on the third line. He might've played with Alfie Turcotte as a centerman. I can't remember who he was playing with, but I think I remember him not being happy because we all know he had lots of gas left in the tank. Cause he came after 4 years, he came out of retirement, yeah. Played that first game in Montreal and scored 3 goals against us with the Rangers. And as I was telling Jim before you came on the show, in warm-up, you might have been at the game, I don't know, but in warm-up, he was getting standing ovations every time he scored in warm-up.
I want that.
It was freaking awesome. We spent the whole warm-up, 20 minutes we have on the ice, skating around looking at Guy Lafleur, like even us, the players, like I'm like, oh my God, Guy's playing. And then he started scoring and Chris Chelios or somebody shake their head and go, the flower, he's God.
Yeah. It's funny you do that. When Marty got traded here with McTavish and him were roommates, and I got the snap, you know, from Gretz, go get Marty, pick him up, take him to the game, do all this shit, right?
Yeah.
And we were driving to the game. It was Marty's going to be his first game. And he asked me, he goes, so we're driving along. I'm in my big company car, right? Smoking. And Marty and Craig are in there. I pick them up. They were roommates. And Marty goes, what's Wayne like, Jim? I went, fuck, I don't know. I've never played hockey with him, but it gives me that same idea. Like he was just, he said, I'm not going to be able to skate tonight.
You know, yeah.
Liam, couple other things. The one I want to get to in a second, but first, was there an other angle to Guy Lafleur as being a tough guy too? Liam?
No.
Never.
No, okay. Not at all.
Drop that question. Okay. Go ahead.
He had a handful of fights in his career, but that was about it. I was saying to Stevie the other day, I mean, Sid's had 5 or 6. Wayne had 3 official fighting majors. Mario's had 5. These guys weren't, no, he did have a couple of scraps, but no, he never was that guy that he never shrunk away from any type of one-on-one battle. I mean, you know, Mike Milbury said he was going to kill him in 78, and there were death threats against Lafleur in 76. The lot of story that people that don't know is that the Canadians swept the Flyers 4 straight in the 76 final. Mm-hmm. After they won Game 3 in Philadelphia, they flew home. You never do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they flew home because of the death threats against Lafleur. Yeah, so they want him out of the city. And then they flew back for Game 4, won the Stanley Cup, and then got the hell out of Dodge too. And I imagine they put a pretty good dent in Montreal nightlife that night.
Yeah.
But and back to what Russ said earlier, he was bang on that Guy did not end well with the Habs. And ironically, under his longtime teammate and linemate and friend, Jacques Lemaire. I mean, Jacques Lemaire just became a coach and Autumn just went to this defense philosophy. Now, he realized he wasn't coaching the team that he played on and started in just a few years earlier. They were nowhere near as strong. But you couldn't take a horse like Lafleur and turn him into a checker or a back checker or a guy who's going to play a 200-foot game. And Russ is right. He did have gas left in the tank. There's no doubt about it. But he wanted Serge to trade him. And Serge said, Guy, if I trade you, I'll be the one getting death threats.
Yeah.
So he couldn't trade him. So Guy retired, 19 games into the season. He only had 2 goals. And he packed it in that first retirement. And like to Russ's point, when he came back, it was surreal. I mean, being in the building, I'll tell you, the cheer that went up when he scored was unbelievable.
Unbelievable
when he scored. It's indescribable what it was like. Indescribable. And, you know, if anything, you saw an outpouring of it last night with an ovation. You know, you hear what happened, right? I mean, they drowned out the announcer three or four times. Now, they did that for the Rockets ovation in 96 as well when they closed the forum. But what happened was when they got to 7 or 8 minutes, they said, let her go. They didn't get to 10. We'll cut her off at 10:10. And that's what they did. So that ovation was 10 minutes and 10 seconds for Guy Lafleur last night.
Oh, cool. Because that's his jersey number.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I get it. Yeah. I get it.
Liam, you've probably heard a lot of descriptions about Guy Lafleur from other players who would be the pundits along with yourself. They would be the barometer about Guy. We know the numbers now that you've given us. Can you recall, Liam, the best description you've ever heard about Guy Lafleur from other players? We all know he whipped up the goals and and his point totals and Stanley Cups and everything else. So it's kind of a two-parter, Liam, the best description you've heard of him. And what separated him, Liam, from the other great players? Was it, stick handling, like Gretzky was his eyes in the end, right? In the end, everyone said, okay, the guy can see everything. What was it for Guy, Liam, if there was something that you had to pick that players said about him and that you have heard or what you think yourself?
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, I'll defer to a number of guys who you were kind of alluding to. Guys like Scotty Bowman said he had a sixth sense. I love Daryl Sutter's quote from a few days ago. He's, of course, right now the head coach of the Calgary Flames, and said that Guy had a skating stride and agility that was Connor McDavid-like. For people who never saw Guy game in and game out and maybe only had the opportunity to see a few highlights, I thought that was such an incredible description coming from Daryl Sutter. You talk about guys like Yvon Cornoyer, Larry Robinson, who's been on your show, Russ Note played with, and Jimmy, and a number of those guys that were teammates of Guy, Serge Savard and these guys, you know what they love to say? They love to say how useless he was at practice, because he couldn't follow a drill. He couldn't follow a drill to save his life, because Scotty one time, got tried to outthink himself as the smartest man in the room, which he was on most cases, but right, tried to design a game plan because Montreal's power play at one point had slipped under 30% or something. So he said, we better work on something here. And tried to get a format going. And of course, Guy couldn't follow it. And Larry has told me many times, Nobody ever wanted Lafleur going first in the drill. Never, ever. Scotty would blow the whistle, or Claude Ruel, because Scotty a lot of times sat in the stands and Ruel would run the practice, and they'd blow the whistle and say, Guy, get about halfway back in the line and we'll worry about it. He had an innate sense, Jimmy, just to throw my own 2 cents worth in here. Mm-hmm. He had an innate sense. He had a natural ability with his God-given talent, his speed and his agility and his shot. A lot of guys had a shot. A lot of guys could skate. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys could stick handle. I mean, for the period of time that he dominated and was the best player in the world, he took the torch from Bobby and handed it to Wayne. For the period that Guy had it, he did all those things better than anybody. Let's use Ken Dryden's quote. He was the best player on the best team. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably as an appropriate way as you can finish saying something about Guy, the player. He was the best player on the best team and combined all of the best instincts needed. Now, he just had a cannon. I mean, this was a guy that was 6 years old, would break into the Thurso Arena before school. He'd go at 6 a.m. There was an old piece of tin at the back of the arena that he was able to pry back. And he would go in there with 10 or 20 pucks and he would fire nothing but slap shots. By the time he was playing in the Quebec Peewee tourney, which he was the MVP of for 3 years in a row, he was taking goalies' heads off in Peewee. So this is a really, really unique guy.
Yeah.
Really unique guy.
Before I ask you something else, Liam, we got to pick a game to watch. You may have answered this question. Everyone's going to do their YouTube homework. Which game should we watch
to get an idea. Pick, you got to pick one. Okay.
Easy,
you can't
easy.
Just be a dumb Montreal fan and go, any game, Jimmy, it was the Flower. Okay. I need a game.
No, if you're asking me specifics, Jimmy, I could quote you obviously several, but I would say there's no doubt, buddy. It's the one we alluded to already by his own admission, his best game, Thursday night, May 10, 1979. And I game seven against Boston. I would tell everybody this as well. If you want to do a little YouTube homework, that watch the one clip. The one clip is only about 2.5 minutes long. So that's pretty easy to digest. From that game? Yeah, from that game. Watch the clip where he scores the goal. And here's why. Here's what you're going to see. After he scores the goal, he goes to the bench. Crowd's going nuts. Loudest I've ever heard a building in my life. I mean, the railing actually shook in my hands when he scored that goal to tie the game at 4. He goes to the bench. The camera is on the bench, and you see Scotty Bowman pacing like he's a caged animal, and he's staring right across, obviously, at Don Cherry. So Grapes tried to get the last change in, and Scotty went nuts on the bench. And you can see this on the clip. You watch him pointing, he's gesturing, he's upset, and then he taps Guy on the shoulder and says, get out there. And he sent him back out there. He just scored the goal. He just played 15 minutes of the third period, and he sent him back out there. And here's what you need to watch. Before that clip ends, there's a couple that's on there, so get the one that's a little closer to two and a half minutes, 2:45, whatever. Before that clip ends, you'll see the puck go back down the ice and Guy take a lead pass. He hits center ice. He knows it's a dying seconds of a tied game going to OT. He lets a shot go that Gilbert never moved on until it hit the boards behind him. That thing, if that wasn't going 110 miles an hour, I'll eat my hat. I'm telling you, I said to Guy when I interviewed him for the 100th anniversary DVD, the Habs 100th anniversary, I said, Guy, that had to be the hardest you ever shot a puck. He says, well, I didn't score, so who cares? I didn't score on that one. Like, he didn't care. And I just think it's amazing to watch on the video. But the whole game, the Bruins deserved a better fate because Ken Dryden was useless in that game. Useless. That's why he retired at 31. Everybody, you know, we get 40 years later, we got to get the violin out and wax nostalgic and say everybody back then was friggin' great. Ken had his moments, man. But by 79, he had nothing left in the tank. Nothing.
Wow.
He wasn't even supposed to play game two of the finals. Wow. What happened was Doug Risebrow broke Bunny LaRocque's finger in warm-up. So they had to put Ken back in. The Habs said, Kenny, don't worry. We got it. And they went on and won the Stanley Cup. And Kenny, at the age of 31, retired. And everyone thought, oh, look at Kenny. Understanding he's got to go in. Now he's going to be a full-time lawyer. You know, and people come to me and say, boy, he had a lot of balls, ace, taking that year off in 73, 74 and articling. No. That's not what happened. He had a contract for $60,000. Sam Pollock said, honor it or screw off. So he left. And then he came back for that 60 grand. And then Sammy gave him the new deal. Now, look at Ken. It was awesome. But not that night and not that playoff year. The Habs won the Cup in 79 for one reason and one reason only. Guy Lafleur.
There you go. Are you sure about that?
That's so good.
Let's talk about, to bring people inside a little bit, about the great Guy Lafleur and his personal life. Liam, if you can give us a sort of wrap on that. What where he came from, and I know he's from Thurso, Quebec. You've given us a little idea about how he whipped into the NHL with an unbelievable junior career. What about post-career, Liam? What was Guy's life?
He first of all, I'll tell you, the guy had an amazing sense of humor. Absolutely fantastic sense of humor. And Jimmy, I know you can appreciate that. He loved to have a good time. He loved to talk to people. He understood his role. He understood his role. He knew what he meant to the Crest, the Habs. He knew what he meant to the NHL. He knew what he meant to hockey. And he knew what he meant in that sense as a Canadian, because he represented Canada on the greatest team ever assembled, the 76 Canada Cup that had 18 guys in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And he understands his role. He understood his role. So he knew all that, but he loved to tell a joke. He loved to smile. He loved to laugh. He loved to have a glass of wine. He loved to, He loved to just enjoy people and understand, find out what was all what you were about, you know, or what was going on in your lives or whatever. And if there was things he could do to help, and then he was so selfless. I mean, listen, I've been around this for 41 years. And to this day, I have never come across a guy who did what he did as like through me, but for that company in Sharp, I should say that couple in Shawville in 2018, the guy that was dying and his last wish was to meet Guy Lafleur. And I phoned Guy and said, if we get the guy down to Montreal, can you maybe hook up and meet him? And he said, where's he live? And I said, Shawville. And he said, find out if I can land a helicopter there. I said, you got to be kidding me. And he said, no, just see if there's a place I can land a helicopter. So I phoned the family back and they phoned the mayor of Shawville. They found a place outside of town, a farmer's field. The guy owned a Cessna. So he had a little grass made runway that had the actual airplane coordinates, which Guy would need to punch into his helicopter GPS. Yep. And then he said, tell the family I'm coming up in 5 days. And he said, are you going, Liam? And I said, yeah, I'll cross the Ottawa River there. I'll take the ferry across or something. He said, no, meet me in Rockcliffe. I'll fly you in. So I met him in Rockcliffe and he flew in. He said, be there at 11:10 a.m. I was there at 11:10 and he's there. His helicopter came in at 11:09 and landed and picked me up. And we flew to Shawville. He spent 90 minutes with that family and that dying man who died 2 months later. He was 71 years of age, ironically, only a year older than Guy when he passed. And I have never heard that was on his time, his dime. He flew me back to Rockcliffe and he gassed that helicopter up. I can't even think what that bill would have been. And then he flew back to Montreal. Wow. So that's the most, I mean, this guy gave all the time. He understood his role, but he gave all the time. And he became a Montreal Canadian ambassador. He was with Jean Béliveau and Rocket Richard originally, and then later Henri Richard had Yvon Cornoyer. Mm-hmm. And then Reggie Uhl and Serge Savard came in after those guys passed away.
Yeah.
Now he's gone too. So he had a great sense of humor though, Jimmy. You would have loved it. You've been around so many guys, and of course, Russ, you played over 1,000 games, and you were a former Hab, and you played in the final with Montreal, and everybody remembers you there too, Russ. You know, you were outstanding for Montreal, man. Outstanding. And I just cherish the fact that I had experiences with Guy, and I worked with him many times, and he did that for that family.
Wow.
Maybe I helped out a little bit because I was the one who called him. But regardless, that was something I've never heard of before.
Liam, that's a great place to end that story, man. Thanks a million. What a great tribute to Guy. And there couldn't be a better guy to do it and sum it up. And you've done a fantastic job with doing that. And are the Habs going to get through the first round this year? Oh, no. Yeah, not a good year for you, Liam. Not a strong year for you.
You mean the U.S. Open, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I got my Oilers, though, Liam. You jump on my bandwagon, baby. Okay?
I'm on, baby. I'm good to go. I'm a huge Connor McDavid fan.
You can't be a Leaf fan if you're a Habs fan. So, Liam, thanks a million, man, for doing this. And I know that it wouldn't have been that easy for you. That people really don't understand that you were very, very close to Guy Lafleur. So, appreciate you doing it. Better times ahead for you, Liam. Thanks a million, brother.
Thanks, Liam. Good seeing you.
Good seeing you, Jimmy. Russ, thank you very much, Russ.
Thanks for listening to The Suspendables. If you're enjoying the show, we invite you to subscribe so you never miss a single episode. Leave a positive review and share the show with your followers. And check out our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.